everybody. This is William Del Pilar, and this is the Red, White, and Rude, where politics and pop culture intersect. And I am happy to say I have been tracking down a gamer, and as a conservative Latino, to find somebody similarly like-minded, and I'll say it, who is also a minority, to me is gold. And not because I'm going to use them. No, not at all. It's what I call like-minded mentality. And even if we disagree on topics, I think it's extremely important for you to listen to this individual. His name is Atreus. And before we get to Atreus, what we're going to talk about today is how politics is always down from pop culture, but we're just going to talk about pop culture. But the gaming industry is, to me, one of the industries that is really on the edge of being able, I don't want to say indoctrinate, but influence our kids and the younger generation. And I'm going to talk about that. But first of all, where can you find this podcast? You can find this podcast at Grumblings Media, along with our political and sports podcasts, as well as YouTube, Rumble, Apple, Spotify, Pandora, and there's one more, Google. And you can find us there under the profile handle, Grumblings Media. And let me introduce a guest, Atreus. First of all, Atreus, thank you for coming. And second of all,
no problem.
Tell us about yourself as well as how people can find some of your work.
Yeah, so that was a really nice intro. I really wish my intro on my shows would be that deep, but sometimes I'm just winging it. But my name's Atreus. I'm from Atlanta, Georgia. I am a gamer, but I'm a writer as well. Like I went to the Art Institute of Atlanta and fell in love with the film industry. I've actually written some screenplays, nothing major that's like gotten produced or anything, but like I actually love writing. I love telling stories. I'm a gamer. I get a lot of my inspiration from games, the art form and whatnot. But I'm mostly a professional shit talker, and that's how I would describe myself in the YouTube space, becoming where I am. You can find me on YouTube at Atreus, A-T-R-A-E-S, on Twitter as Official Atreus. And primarily what I do, what separates me from a lot of the people in my space, is that a lot of people would describe the people in my space as probably angry. You know, all of the Instaphobe comments that, you know, but me, I'm having a lot of fun roasting, if that makes sense. Like a lot of people would probably describe me as a comedian, because I mean, you come to my channel for the laughs. And that's what we're mainly trying to do.
I got to be honest. I found your channel informative.
So I went through a transformative nature. Of course, I started my channel out kind of just talking. I was nervous. I kind of did it on a whim because, believe it or not, I actually had a podcast well before everybody had a podcast. But I used to be a quitter, and my situation used to be very dependent upon like my friends. I used to wait for my friends to do stuff. And then finally in 2022, I finally was just like, screw it, I'm gonna just go ahead and do it myself. And that kind of just, it worked. And so like, I kind of went through, I was doing movie reviews, but then I stopped doing that because I felt like people were only looking for negative movie reviews. And so I kind of went to just like kind of reading articles, much like a lot of my people in my space do, reading articles to the audience. But that kind of like, that didn't allow me to display my personality a lot. And so I kind of like started being, I got more comfortable being me, and it's taking off from there.
You know, and I'm happy for you. Mm-hmm. Again, off screen, I was telling him how working class people, we should stick together. I was in the same boat. My father was in special mm-hmm. forces community, never at home. I was raised by a mom, an aunt, and three sisters. Mm-hmm. And I'm not ashamed to say the three sisters used to beat on me, gang up on me and beat on me. But so yeah. I never learned how to be a leader. I never learned how to, you know, grab the bull by the horns. I never had a mentor, a father. Mm-hmm. And after when I joined the military, that's when all that started to happen. And for me, it was about fantasy sports. I saw a potential there. And I'm a little older, so I have been around since the 70s. But in mm-hmm. the 90s in college, I saw Netscape first came out. I don't even know if you know what Netscape mm-hmm. is. I assume Netscape was the mm-hmm. first commercial browser. You know, the whole world was AOL, but then Netscape. Oh, wow. And it was the first commercial browser. And I helped commercialize and pioneer the fantasy sports industry. And I say that for a couple of reasons. One, I stopped being a follower. But two, mm-hmm. to me, a 5'7" Latino, because Football is a cash cow. NFL is a cash cow. Mm-hmm. For me to be able to do that, and I'm just an average Joe, I'm like, if I can do it, anybody freaking can.
Anybody
that's
can
my,
do it.
Yeah, and that's my hope.
Yeah, I love football, by the way.
I did, yeah. Oh, so we're, yeah, I have it. To ask. I'm we a, are I'm going to digress up. Here. I have to ask, what do you think of the Penix pick in the first round after spending over $100 million in guarantee? It was like about $140 million, but $100 million, I think, is like guaranteed with Kirk Cousins.
You're not going to believe it, but I loved it. I love it. I wish I would have recorded my reaction, but I loved it.
Oh, I hated it, but not because it was Penix. It was, to me, you could have traded down just even a few picks, racked up more, and still gotten Penix because Kirk Cousins is 35.
We couldn't have.
They have to win now. Yeah, with
we
him.
Couldn't have. We couldn't
you
have moved.
You don't think he would have dropped?
No. Las Vegas is sick to their stomach because they thought that they was going to have a chance to draft a quarterback. And remember, the Broncos took the last quarterback that was – like six quarterbacks went off the board. So the Broncos took Bo Nix. The Broncos, I believe, would have been more comfortable with Michael Penix. I think Sean Payton would have enjoyed more of a pocket guy. And not saying that Bo Nix can't be a pocket guy, but, you know, we've seen Bo Nix for, what, 3 or 4 years over in Auburn. He's an improviser. And good on Oregon to get him to play from within the system. But you're going to have to bang out some bad habits. Penix is in the pocket from Jump Street. That's what he wants to do. He wants to sit in the pocket. He wants to throw the ball. And so people keep saying we could have traded down. We were at 8. Minnesota moved up to 10. To take their quarterback because they got nervous when we took Penix.
Yeah.
Also, the Broncos, and by the way, the Saints were interested in taking a quarterback as well. They went and got Spencer Rattler later on, but we know that the Saints were looking at Michael Penix heavy, and so I think the Falcons just looked at it like, hey, listen, we got a 36-year-old quarterback coming off an Achilles injury. We had to get him. Free agency comes first. You know what I'm saying?
You know,
No,
I get that. Mm-hmm. And one thing I want to note to the audience, I did this for a living for decades. In fact, I love telling people I was the NFL Network, my partner and I, the NFL Network's Total Access Show. Mm-hmm. We were their first fantasy analysts. So people used to say, well, what makes you an expert? I go, it's not that I'm an expert, but I do this for a living. So I get all this data, all this info that the average person. But when I'm talking to somebody, I always listen to what I call the nuance of the small detail. And in that moment, you show me you know football. Because when you said Sean Payton would have been happier with a drop back quarterback, people don't realize that's absolutely 100% true. His best – people forget – Sean Payton was on the verge of being fired by the Saints before they got Drew Brees. And Drew Brees was the pocket quarterback who could sit there and effectively work his system. And man, impressive, impressive. And I'm not blowing hot air up your butt.
No. I mean, you're 100% right. I mean, as far as, you know, people asking what makes you an expert, I agree with you. It's not really about whether you're an expert. It's about if you're a student of the game. And it's not like an insult to somebody who's not a student of the game. Being a student of the game is, it really makes you a maniac because you're doing all this stuff for free that people are getting paid tens of thousands to do, but I love doing it. So when you talk about Sean Payton, Sean Payton is what's considered an offensive mastermind. So one thing he does not like is a quarterback in the pocket improvising because you want the offense to run within that 3 to 6 seconds that you designed it to be.
Right.
The moment the quarterback starts moving around, you're no longer in control. So for better or for worse, I mean, sure, if you got Patrick Mahomes, good on you.
Do what you can do.
But when you have a guy like Russell Wilson, where you're watching guys run open down the field, if he would operate within the offense and throw the ball on time, but he rather spin out of the pocket when he doesn't necessarily need to be, or maybe he can't really see over the offensive line, who knows? And you're missing wide open targets, or, you know, you're waiting for guys to be wide. Like, you know, a lot of my fans wanted to go after Justin Fields for some weird reason. And I'm like, dude, like the guy who needs the wide receivers to be wide open before he throws. I'm not doing that. I'm glad we got Kirk and I'm glad we got Michael Penix.
You know, I love Kirk because Kirk, I got to say this. Kirk Cousins has won like one big game. But to me, he has the greatest agent in the game. He's had, what, 200, 300 million, like, in guarantee? Well, maybe
he's the highest paid. I think he's still the highest paid quarterback of all time.
Yeah, it's like he's got all these millions, and I'm like, God bless him. And it was an ugly situation between him and RG3 when he was when they were both drafted. But, you know, at the end of the day, this is what makes football fun. And, guys, I encourage you to listen to our new NFL podcast that comes on every Tuesday, live streams every Tuesday. We are a pop culture one, but I just couldn't help but pick the brain, especially with Atlanta. Atlanta's big time in the news. And as much as I want to say you're wrong about they could have traded down. I believe they could have, but I can't argue with anybody who says they couldn't, because that's how unpredictable with so many quarterbacks and so many quarterbacks viewed as highly as this group was to where, you know, what happens once a move gets made, like you said, I can't remember, said was it Minnesota or Denver, said, you know, they may have panicked a little bit and said, oh my God. Right. So that triggers them into certain moves. And the fun thing about having worked that industry is you're right. Because you realize these guys are no different than I am. They just, this is their job, this is their livelihood, you know? So great take there.
I think the one thing I'll throw out there is I can't confirm right now, because I'd have to search through my phone. I think I saw a notification recently from Bleacher Report that the Falcons were actually trying to trade back at one point. Now I don't know if it was before Penix was on the, I know. Because early reports, and I didn't believe it. This is why I was so excited, because I didn't think that they had the cojones to actually do what they did.
Right.
But I remember seeing they were looking at Michael Penix. It was being reported. I remember Brian Baldinger was on Twitter saying he was having a premonition that the Falcons were going to take a quarterback. I remember Adam Schefter reporting that, hey, don't rule out quarterback. And I remember seeing that they wanted Penix, but they believed that eight was a little bit too rich. And so that's why I kind of moved it out of sight and out of mind. Michael Penix was my favorite quarterback in his draft. Not the best quarterback in his draft. I think that was Caleb Williams. But Michael Penix was my favorite quarterback in the draft. And I wanted him. I just knew he was going to be a Raider. I was like, damn, I'm going to have to watch him in Las Vegas, and it's going to break my heart. And so when they went up there and they said, with the eighth overall pick, the Atlanta Falcons take Michael Penix, I jumped out of my seat. I couldn't believe they did it. So, I love it. But
I actually like Penix more than Caleb. I'm not a Caleb Williams fan, not because he doesn't have the physical tools.
His attitude.
It's his whole makeup. I mean, the guy is wailing in mama's arms, you know, with the pink nails, this and that. And I don't care if that's who you are, but the quarterback position is a position of leadership. Those men under you, they want to follow a man, not a pajama boy. And right now, that's all I see is a pajama boy. Plus, I question his team, his ability to play and function in a team environment. The guy transferred to USC for one reason, to bolster and ensure his NFL draft prospect status, you know? So he's never done anything for the team in my eyes. But that doesn't mean I'm wrong. But what I'm, as an evaluator, I'm like, I'm just completely staying away from that guy. I mean, because at the end of the day, there is no draft with top 10, top 15 QBs where every one of those QBs taken were mega hits in the NFL. You have more busts than not. And that's what makes that pick so tricky. Like Penix, I can't argue with somebody who says, man, the guy's been injured four times, you know? I go, but his last 2 years he was healthy. Plus, people don't realize, I don't know if you know this, but I talked to a doctor early on, and it irks me that not many people mention this, but the human male physique does not stop growing internally till about your 26, 28, right around there. So he is still growing internally, meaning his muscle, his density, his mass is getting stronger. But I still worry about the knees, because it doesn't matter how big you are, those joints stay the same size as your base frame. Yeah. But that's about the only thing, because I thought it was smart. He did it tactfully, and it was extremely classy, that letter he wrote. Mm-hmm. That was Penix that wrote that letter, wasn't it? In terms of why you should pick me? Am I confusing
myself? I might have missed that story.
Well, he sat there and said, I've been injured. Like, I've been injured, but I come back.
Oh, no, you're right. You're right. It was him. Because he was talking about all of the adversity that he overcame. And, yeah, there's a lot of things that was mentioned. I think there was a story told recently that when they asked at the combine who – the other quarterbacks, who was the hardest working quarterback there? And everybody pointed to Michael Penix. And that was one of the reasons. And then also the story that they went to Washington in that terrible weather, and they gave him, they brought their own footballs for him to throw, and the footballs were hard and cold. Oh, wow. And they were whistling through the ears, and whistling through the wind as he was throwing them. And that's when they walked away, and they were like, yeah, that's our guy. So I don't know. Some people say they were trying to trade it back, but I'm like, listening to those stories, I was like, it doesn't seem like you were trying to trade it back, unless they really thought that unless they thought what you thought, which, you know, we could trade back and get them. But I think once those three, I think a lot of people thought that it was a possibility that, I don't know why, but maybe New England could have passed. If I was New England, I would have passed on a quarterback this year. I'm sorry. I know.
I think Drake May is destined to die in New England. I mean, that's just a bad – people forget.
Like, putting these young quarterbacks in these bad situations. You're just ruining their career. I still think Sam Darnold could be something in Minnesota. He has Justin Jefferson to throw to, and along with some other pieces, Jordan Addison. I think he could be something. His career was ruined because he got drafted by the Jets and went to Carolina.
See, you and I are on the same page. People kind of like start snickering and laughing. I'm like, exactly. I'm like, the Jets is where young quarterbacks go to die. You know, they have not developed a quarterback since Chad Pennington. And Chad Pennington was one of the smartest quarterbacks in the league. Mm-hmm. He just didn't have all the physical tools. So he didn't really need the Jets to develop him. Yeah. He was that far ahead. And then going to Carolina, I mean, you know, I look at Cam Newton. I'm like, dude, you lost 5 years of NFL play because they never had a plan to transition you from being a linebacker in a quarterback's body to becoming a dropback quarterback. Your career, Ed.
I don't think he ever had the potential to be. When you look at his throwing motion, I pay a lot of attention to quarterbacks' throwing motion, and it's one of the reasons why I never liked Justin Fields. If anybody watches him, he has a long throwing motion. It's a windup.
Oh yeah,
and it looks. It looks good when he's throwing it deep. He throws a pretty deep ball, but anything other than that, it's a little bit inconsistent. And so when it comes to Cam Newton, the way he throws the ball, like Cam Newton grew up down the street from where I'm from. So, you know, it's good playing him. It's fun watching him, but when that 30 number hits and your joints start hurting because you've been taking so many hits, I don't care how big you are. You know, I remember that hit Deion Jones put on him. There was a hit Deion Jones put on him right before, because he thought he was going to cruise into the end zone. And Deion Jones is, what, 6'1", 230, and Cam is 6'5", 250. And Deion Jones did not care. He laid it on him, and Cam Newton didn't know what hit him. So,
hey. Kind of reminds me of the Leon Lett. Remember that Thanksgiving? I don't know if you were alive back then, the Thanksgiving game. He's dancing into the end zone with the ball out. That happened in the Thanksgiving game. Mm-hmm. Maybe not Leon Lett, but it also happened in the Super Bowl.
I might have seen the highlight, but I was probably too young.
I'm old. I've just been blessed with good genes. That's all, you know. Okay. We could talk football all day because I don't necessarily have the passion I used to. But I love the business side of it. And when I say the business, not evaluating the players, but seeing what they get, their wins, losses, their deficiencies. So from that perspective. But to the audience, let me remind you, we are going to talk about the original Gamergate. And Atreus was not around back then, so he may not be 100%. So we're not going to hold him to it. And I did some research, but the reason I want to talk about Gamergate is, to me, before Gamergate, I will not sit there and shirk away from the truth. All computerized women were, I mean, look at Lara Croft. You know, that's just, it was dominated by men. They were built by men. It was all men. So I understand you're always going to have some issues. But when Gamergate came out, it seemed to me to be an opportunity to for individuals, progressives, for lack of a better word, wanting to attack young men and to push their beliefs on them. In fact, one individual did commit suicide. And then I want to talk about the G4 Frost situation because that was a continuation of the politics. And those were the two biggest items that did cross over into the mainstream and have mainstream ramifications in terms of how important the gaming industry is and in influencing us. And then Atreus is going to educate us completely on this Sweet Baby Inc. Issue, which some are calling Gamergate 2, and they have targeted at Grums. And well, the reason they targeted at Grums is also he's been vocal about it. And at Grums is a pivotal individual in the gaming industry, having been involved heavily with World of Warcraft. And we're not sure exactly how deep he was, but he was a heavy hitter in there. So, you know, Atreus, are you set to go?
Yeah, I'm set to go. So when it comes to the original Gamergate, like you said before, like I wasn't around, but like I hadn't been red pilled by then. I was still like, you know, just a normal guy. What, this was what, 2016? So yeah, I was what, 2014? I was 3 years removed from high school at that point. So
I was 3 years partying and having fun in life.
I was just out here. So I wasn't online like that to even know what was going on with Gamergate. But from based on what I understand, because I've you know, watching other content creators, I've heard people mention them. Like I would hear people say stuff like Gamergate. You know, I don't know if you guys know who the Quartering is, but the Quartering used to make this, you know, this joke. He would go Gamergate. I'm like, what the hell is he talking about? So I would go and look it up. And I guess I never quite got any real answers about it. Like there was a like small explanations, but it never really made sense. I'm like, what are you guys talking about? So basically, from what I understand, I didn't get like real answers until I actually became a content creator. And so basically, from what I understand was that a guy, I guess, exposed his girlfriend because she was exchanging sexual favors for favorable reviews on video games. Gamers caught wind of this. Now, here's the thing. I know there's a lot of female gamers, but gamers is typically a male dominated, you know, medium. When you let a bunch of men know that there is a woman out here being promiscuous in exchange for gaming reviews, guys are going to hop all over that. And so a lot of content creators jumped on it. And then that's when they turned it into this sexism thing. Remember, guys, feminism is far and wide. They believe in the full autonomy over their body, and I should be able to do whatever I want to do. And so when gamers started making fun of this, this became a full-scale attack on the medium. They looked at you, me, and others like us need to be neutered. That's the way I looked at it. So
that's my basic understanding. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I did a lot of research on it because I was like you. I heard of it. I kind of understood it vaguely, but I didn't know any of the details. But I did know it was an important part of what is now called the woke movement or the Me Too movement. And it became part of that movement when that happened. And you're right. It was about an ex-boyfriend writing on a blog post about his ex. And some of those topics came up. My issue with Gamergate, and this is why I wanted to talk about it, is it's not directly related to DEI specifically, but in the bigger picture, it was a moment that the mainstream media and those in power took to attack male gamers, and as you said, neuter us. And Gamergate's seen as a first pushback against the politicization of popular culture by the social justice left. And to me, they may not have all out won that war, but they influence gaming in terms of, and what I mean by the influence is how the stories are written, you know, who the bad guys are.
It was Hydra.
People are.
It was literally Hydra. I mean, you've seen the, it was quite Marvel literally. You can go in the comments, but the movie, remember in Winter Soldier, what Steve Rogers learned was that they thought Hydra was defeated, and it turned out that Hydra was actually growing inside of S.H.I.E.L.D., and that's quite literally what people did. Oh, yeah, so
that's a great analogy. That's exactly what
it's quite literally what they did. You thought it went away. Oh, it died down, you know, Gamergate, whatever. We'll go back to being gamers. You'll go back to being social justice warriors and then whatever. Well, then here we are 10 years later. And as it turns out, these people never went away. They actually got jobs. They started hiring other people that thought like them, and they're trying to transform the industry from the inside out. And it's had a lot of repercussions for a lot of people.
Yeah, that's a great analogy. I think one of the for the side that just wants to have happy gaming, you know, leave the politics out of it. For our side, it highlighted the skepticism of journalists wanting to investigate a story, but just believing the side that aligns with their ideology or their belief system. And that's what Gamergate. And the person who led that charge, who was the woman being talked about, her name was Zoe Quinn. And in her defense, I mean, it's keep your business private unless it's a story to tell. Maybe he thought it was a story to tell how she was sleeping with and moving up. And here's to the audience, you know, especially the gaming audience. It's younger than I am. But at the end of the day, that is the way women move up. Is it right? Is it fair? It doesn't matter. It is what it is.
It is what it is.
And was she or wasn't she? Well, that's a legitimate question if he said it. Instead, she took the wolves out. She played the victim. And here's what I found fascinating about her is she spoke at the UN. They came out with this book, these nonprofits. To me, it sounded like either she truly believes this, which isn't the impression I got, or she's very smart and pulled off some great grifts here to generate a name for herself and to make money. I don't know who she was, but that's what I got out of it, because at the end of the day is I believe we're both correct. It was a way for their side to kind of neuter the young men, which made up the book. See, I come from the fantasy sports industry, and I'm assuming same demographics, 97%. And I still have this memorized. Demographics is how I built our marketing campaign, et cetera. It's 97% men. But there's a lot of women, and I've seen some abuse to the women as we used to manage leagues, and I saw a couple of the girls who were in the all-male leagues. I saw one league, they wanted to change the rules once the fantasy playoff started because the girl qualified, and they didn't want her in there. She had a losing record. I refused to allow that. She went on a run because, you know, fantasy football, even NFL teams, sometimes they can go on a run and just beat anybody.
Yeah.
She went on a run at the right time and won that league. I've never been more prouder, not only of her, but of myself for holding strong.
That's got to be a terrible pill to swallow.
Oh,
trying to keep her out.
Yeah, exactly. And they were pissed when I did it. Yeah. You know? But at the end of the day, I see both sides. But the devastation is when one side plays the victim to use something that happens to others, but they use it as a political weapon. And that's what I believe Zoe did here. And like I said in the intro, there's an individual named Alec Holoka. Have you heard of him? Holoka? He was literally bullied or harassed into suicide.
I never knew his name, but I heard that story that he had been bullied into you know, deleting himself. I'm sorry, YouTube talk suicide.
No. I get it. Hey, and you're educating us. Oh, guys, I've heard that before. Very unique way of saying it.
Yeah, you know, YouTube doesn't like certain words. Suicide is definitely one of those words that they don't like. So you kind of get trained into saying self-deletion, stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. We've got an R warning on there. And, you know, at the end of the day, you know, that was pretty much just a minor point. And my take is somebody actually killed themselves. Where are all you reporters? And they ignore it because it doesn't fit the narrative. Now, for the audience out there for Gamergate, the boyfriend's name was Iran Joni. Starts with the G. I'm assuming that's silent. So Iran Joni or Gijoni. I'm terrible with names, and I apologize. I guess maybe that's why I never took offense when people mispronounce my name, my last name all the time. But he brought up in his post, it wasn't about sex and her sleeping with each other as being his focal point for the story. It was about the nepotism in the indie development scene, the social justice influence that he thought was being abused, the game journalism critique, which I thought was the most important. And that's not just game journalism. That's literally across the spectrum. I come from the sports industry, and it's there too. And we all know it's in politics, you know. So this is what I try to tell people. Look, this isn't something in terms you can pinpoint. This is part of our human nature, our DNA. Mm-hmm. If there are no checks and balances at work, we are going to revert to what we can get away with, you know, and that's human nature. And the final piece, it was to warn others about about Zoe Quinn's alleged behavior and the impact on the industry. In Hollywood, it's the Weinstein effect, meaning I look at all those actresses who slept with him. I don't fault them for doing what they felt they had to do. But what about the actresses that did not sleep with him? that said no.
Yeah, and that's the most important. That's the thing. So, like, and you know, here's an analogy for you. You're right. It happens all the time, and it's just a part of the industry. Why you would bring it to the light, putting her personal business out there, I suppose, is perhaps you know, I would want to know that if I'm reading the review for somebody on a video game, if the game is actually good, because my money's on the line. So if you're telling me a game is good, and I trust you, because I used to go to IGN for everything. Like, I used to read, like, before I would buy a game, watch a movie, I would read IGN. And so it's kind of like when it comes to women, like, and this is why, like, they a lot of women talk about why they don't get the same amount of respect. There's a rapper, her name is Lotto. A couple years ago, she did an interview where she talked about how another artist that she was trying to do a song with for her album wanted to give her a verse in exchange for sexual favors. And she was like, absolutely not. And she called on all of the women in the industry. Oh God, we should stand against this. And we should start calling these guys out. And then silence. Not one woman in the industry came up and said, you know what? She's right. Because the truth of the matter is, when you have artists, the bigger artists that she's trying to get verses from, they're right. saying, yeah, if you want a verse, from me, it's going to cost you $350,000. If you want a verse from an international superstar like Drake, it's going to cost you north of $1 million. Back in the day, a hip-hop artist's verse used to cost $50,000, guys. But now they're getting endorsements. You see them on commercials now. The prices are going up. So if you're a woman, right, and artists like Drake or Eminem come in and say, yeah, I want $500,000 for a verse, and you know you just signed for $2,000 to a record label, you can't afford that. So exactly. When they insinuate, well, you know, they give you that look. Oh, yeah. A lot of women have no problem doing it. They don't. So I'm not surprised that Zoe Quinn was doing what she was doing. I'm not surprised. I'm just disgusted.
If that was what she was doing. I don't want
to. If that was what she was doing. Okay. That's you're right. If that was what she was doing, what I'm more disgusted by is that they took that and decided, you know what? You guys need to be snuffed out. Just for calling this out, you need to be snuffed out. And so that's what
See, they don't care about destroying, ruining lives as seen by that suicide, and they just kind of ignore the story. And that's what angers me. I argue a lot of times with these people who are against Israel doing to Hamas, not because I'm supporting Israel, not because of that. Mm-hmm. It's because my take is, well, what if that was your kid? Had a baseball bat with barbed wire stuck in the rectum, then the front, over and over. Then the torture begins. Then the violent murder begins. Would you sit there and say, let's take a step back and tell Israel what they need to do or not do? Me, that was my kid. I'd be, let's kill them all. And I'm not saying I'm right, but I'm saying to dismiss the death of somebody's kid. I don't care what scenario. Mm-hmm. We as, I want to say Americans, but to me it's human nature. We don't care about what happens to the other person's child, the murder, when it comes to our ideology. We only care when it actually happens to us. You know what movies I hate the most? And Air Force One was a great example with Harrison Ford as the president. You know, people wouldn't give up whatever Gary Oldman's bad character needed, you know, and Harrison Ford, the president, allowed their wife or their kid or whatever it was to get killed. But then when it happened to Harrison Ford's kid in the movie, he caved in. And I thought that was a mistake by Hollywood to show that, because that's not what Hollywood wants to see. But to me, it epitomized human nature. Yeah, Ford didn't care when all of the men working for him, it was their family dying. But once it was his kid, all of a sudden, screw my responsibilities as president. And I hate that we don't stress that more. The bigger picture overall is war should be a last resort. And what did we do after we were attacked on 9/11? We went and did the same thing. So, and I'm not saying that's right or wrong, because my first question was, why are we in Afghanistan? And I served, you know. That said, props here to a few of the sources where I found some of this on. And it's a great article here you should read. I'll ask the tech to make sure he puts the link here. It's an article called Almost Everything You Know About Gamergate Is Wrong. And it's by a woman named Kathy Young. And it's on Medium. I mean, have you ever heard of Kathy Young? Is she a player in the gamer industry?
The name sounds familiar, but I can't say that like I know of her work or anything like that. Her name sounds like it came up. Like I said, when it came to Gamergate, trying to educate myself on that, I came across a great many of videos, and it seemed like none of them was on the same page with the stuff right. they were saying. And so I kind of just ignored it until Gamergate 2 happened. And that's when like I started meeting people who was actually around during that time, and they told me what was happening. So.
Oh, yeah. And another article I got is Night in the Woods, talked about Alec Holoka, who died, and that was by Polygon. And then I got information from Zoe Quinn from mostly Wikipedia. Wikipedia is great to progressives. They'll sit there like, anybody else, you're a racist or whatever word they want to use. And then finally, the Zoe post, which is a WordPress post, and that was by the boyfriend. So I want to give some kudos to that, because if you're looking for information, those are some great resources there. But I want to talk about G4 and Frost to educate my audience of older gamers. And it's an important topic because it was a continuation of what progressives are trying to do to the gaming industry. Instead of just building great games, letting them play out, we enjoy it, they want to put their ideological message. Now, the incident refers to a controversy involving Indiana Frost Curran Black, which is called Frost. And honestly, people would look at me as crazy. When I first saw her, I'm like, oh, she's a cute little girl. You know, that's what I thought, you know, never realizing how much her sexuality was going to play into this whole incident. And it was in January 2022, she criticized sexism in the gaming industry during an episode of X-Play. And that was an online X-Play was an online episode. G4 had made the decision to come back in full force, but online. And it led to a direct backlash from viewers. And from there, when you saw that, what were your initial thoughts? For me, first, she goes, well, unsubscribe to follow. So I was like, sure enough, boop. And I was done with it. What was your take on that situation?
The way I looked at it was, I thought it was a – so what I've always said is that right now the gaming industry is full of a bunch of beta males. I always looked at that situation as a complete failure of all the men in the room and in the office. One, the amount of money they spent on that office was egregious. The amount of employees they had in there was absolutely fucking egregious. And so you're already operating – where like guys like you got to turn a profit fast or this is going to go down fast. Yep. And so when Frost comes into your office and say, you know what, I've been seeing some mean comments, I want to address, you know, sexism in gaming, because she went to somebody up there and said she was going to talk about this and they approved it, the men in the room should have said absolutely not. I'll defend you. I'll, you know, we'll do what we can to kind of like, you know, clean up the comments. Say, well, do we have to hide the chat from you? I'll defend you. I'll protect you as much as I possibly can. Whether you think you're a woman or not is not my concern. To me, I see a woman. So I'll do what I can, the power I use to protect you. But I'm not going to let you, because I got it was 26 people there. So it's me, you, there's 24 other people whose livelihoods are banking on this show being a hit. And they all got families and we got to feed them. So I'm not going to let you go out there and call half of our goddamn audience sexist. I'm not going to let you do it. But of course, like I said, you know, it's an industry run by people like Greg Miller and fucking Ryan McCaffrey and shit. So nobody's going to actually tell a woman no. So she went up there and she said something. And listen, as far as the comments about her looks, I know you said she was I don't know when you saw her. What I saw from her, I didn't really see anything attractive. I saw somebody who was having an identity crisis with what they wanted to be.
What I saw was the type of face, a cute little girl face in an industry with a bunch of young males, you know, kind of the little cartoonish, elfish type look. You know, that type. So when I first saw him, I'm like, okay, somebody who seems to fit in. And that's how I took it from there. And then when
I get what you're saying. If you're going to bring back G4 for nostalgia's sake, okay. Because I think what they thought they was bringing back G4. So I think when they do stuff like this, they think they're going to get our nostalgia while pulling in a new audience like Gen Z. And you fail miserably because Gen Z don't recognize G4. They don't care about G4. It doesn't mean anything to them. And so when you bring in, like, we were used to seeing Morgan Webb and Olivia Munn. That's what we came to see. Yeah, that's what we came to see.
And we saw more than just them in tight clothes, which is was the hypocrisy of everything she was saying. Let me ask you this question. Mm-hmm. I growing up with my startup, I told you off screen, we were all gamers, you know, so we were a startup shoestring budget, but for loyalty and to show our employees, I love them to death. I'd always get them a GameSpot. GameStop. GameStop, always $70 so they could afford taxes and all to get that one game, you know? Mm-hmm. And so G4 was on our television when we weren't watching ESPN News or something like that for that. And the sexuality, not only the innuendos, but what they showed on camera was beyond PG-13 with the innuendos. So when I was watching Frost, and I've come to loathe Adam Sessler, and I see Adam Sessler clapping like a seal, and I'm like, if anybody should have taken your advice, we can't do that. It's him, because he was there during that time of peak sexuality, laughing at it, gawking at it.
He was a participant in it.
Exactly.
He was a participant in it.
You know, and that to me said, G4's bigwigs have no freaking clue. And you're right. For the money they invested, they could have had a show that had more shows, more episodes, more whatever, and done in a completely different way. They took their old model and just semi-adapted it for the internet. And when I say semi, you know, the process of doing it productively or technologically. But when it came to the big picture, they had no clue on how to connect with the Gen Zers. And they thought, and I bet you, I subscribe to a lot of their channels out of nostalgia, out of loyalty. So they got me that way, but I didn't come to the site because I'm an adult now. I'll go look for a review, you know, so I would go to their site. But when I saw that again, just click, what's your thoughts on Adam Sessler? One, as a human being, because I am curious, the guy just is vile and evil towards people he ideologically disagrees with, including family. But what's your take also on the fact that he was around back then? And he was also a beloved personality for many, many years for him to become the person he is. Thoughts on that, sir?
Well, to be honest with you, when G4 went away, I didn't really keep track of Adam Sessler. And then when the G4 came back and they said it was going to bring him back, that's when he came on my radar again. And like I said, when I became a content creator, that's when I started learning about how psychotic he was online. So I think time is a thing here, because like I compare that to like Game of Thrones, right? I didn't start watching Game of Thrones until season 7. I had a girlfriend who wanted me to watch it so bad. And I said, oh, Jesus Christ, I'll just watch it. And I binge watched it and I became hooked. It was season 7. And so I waited 2 years for season 8. And it was devastating. Not as devastating to me as it was for the people who watched and waited for each season, and they had to wait for each episode, who invested in the memorabilia and they cosplayed and stuff like that. It's the same thing when it comes to Adam Sessler. There's probably people who's been keeping up with Adam Sessler for years, and it didn't set into their mind how psychotic he was until he really got on the show. I didn't know. He got on the show, and like you said, he was doing the seal clapping, and I'm like, this is odd, because if I'm not mistaken, he's a producer. Like the whole entire show is around Adam Sessler, if I'm not mistaken. So like, this is odd. You sanctioned some of these behaviors that you're now applauding someone for calling sexist. And you know, I don't know if you saw the interview that Frost went on to do after G4 got shut down. She went on and did an interview with a guy. I think he worked for Bounding in the Comments. And she talked
about
it
came out afterwards. I mean, like some months afterwards. Yes, I did see
that. Yeah. And she talked about how, like, this is why I always tell people, it's not like this one agenda at the top. There's not a war, but there's politics going on at the top, and different people are winning those political wars at the top. Yep. She talked about how there was one producer who said something egregious. And I was like, okay, what did he say that was so egregious? She was like, I can't believe he said this, but this is what he said. He said the reason why it's not working is because there are no hot people working here. And so I'm sitting there waiting for the punchline. And she's like, yeah. I'm like, well, that's fucking common sense. people like looking at attractive people on screen. What are you talking about? And she thought that was something like Me Too worthy. She thought that that's a fireable offense. And so, like, yeah, that whole nightmare was just ridiculous.
You know, it's that's been taken to court. There was a Puerto Rican case in a case from Puerto Rico. And when I took my first college course back in the 80s, late 80s, the courts ruled, yes, they have a right to fire her for her looks, because how an anchor looks is part of the formula in bringing in viewers. And today's society, and God bless them, you know, I don't care. There's loving to be made for every single person. But again, human nature, we want to see pretty people. Look at Hollywood men. When I was a kid, you had the flabby Kevin Costners and they could get away with it. Now those men have to be cut up, you know, slice and dice with those abs, you know. Even I'm like, damn, that guy looks good. What the hell? You know?
The first time I seen Henry Cavill come out of that lake in Man of Steel, I was like, God damn. Start looking at myself like.
And you're not gay, for those of you out there. You're just like, holy man. And you know, taking Henry Cavill further, he has some of the – he is one of the best actors in stunt type scenes. I'm a fan of The Witcher. And those stunts in there – or not even the stunts, but the moves, the choreography. Oh, my God. It's like – whoever that guy choreographer is, he must have learned from Asian films. They have some of the best choreographers, and they do bring him over to the stateside. Now, I'll be called a racist. Oh, what are you talking about? This and that. I just call it like I see it, you know? Yeah. But at the end, so the show got a lot of backlash, and I'm not going to defend Frost, but I do think they left her out there to dry after they realized did. Absolutely.
But that's why I said. Yeah, that's why I said it was a complete failure on their side. The audacity of you to give her the green light to do what she did, and then when she got roasted for it, you didn't do what you were supposed to do to kind of calm the storm.
But that's business. Conglomerates will do that. They don't care about your ideology. They don't care about your culture, your religion. At the end of the day, you individuals who think a corporation has a long litany of lists that you approve of, no, it's one mission, one job, to make a profit.
Make money.
Yeah, some of your lists can fall under how they can make their profit, but their only job is to make a profit. And they dumped her when they saw everything was going downhill. And the importance of that, I thought, was it was a massive pushback. One, in terms of where they lost that battle, the non-woke side lost that battle. But more importantly, and I don't know if it really this point came across, it showed, look, this is gaming. This is an industry where a AAA game can cost more than a big tent movie in Hollywood and generate much more in profits. This is a serious industry. And we, as the parents out there, the adults in the room, do not seem to understand when you use your Xbox or PlayStation to babysit your kid, there are ramifications to that depending on what you want your child to learn. You know, and so that's why I wanted to talk about that in general. In general, before we leave this, to give you the last word, what were your thoughts and takeaways in a few sentences regarding this whole situation? What did it? I mean, it's like we always leave something going, well, you know, this or that. What did you come away with?
Well, the way I came away with it was my immediate thought was I could have done better. I would have done better with a smaller budget It is one of my goals to actually do a show similar to that, but like much more condensed and much more. I mean, because you could easily do a pop culture show where you cover this week's video games, movies, TV shows, comic books, and all of that, and you can do it with beautiful women. I mean, like with the backing of G4 and Comcast during that, my first thought would have been, okay, let me go and get Amarath to come host the show. Let me go and get, I don't like her. Yeah, despite the fact that I don't really like her politically, I would go and get Pokimane. Hey, Pokimane, how much would it cost to get you to come? Because that Gen Zers love Pokimane. Also, who, you know, I would go and get these young influencers to come in and just strictly talk about games. And all we got to do is say, hey, listen, whatever your political views, leave that shit at the door. We strictly here to talk about games, movies, TV shows, or whatever the case may be. And it could be purely entertaining. And we don't need 26 people in the back running it. I just need, give me a sound guy, give me a camera guy, give me a producer, and give me my talent in front of the screen, and then we'll figure the rest out. And that's the way that I figured that, you know, I would do it. I mean, you could even make it, if you want to, like, semi get political, you could, I would do it in the realm of Undisputed. I would put two people at the table and have them debate these topics that we talk about. Like, okay, instead of getting on camera and saying sexism in gaming, you guys are sexist, you could have got on the camera and said, hey, listen, so sexism in gaming, is this sexist? Why or why not? And have two different people on two sides of the spectrum kind of battle it out and let the audience choose what they believe.
You're right. And think about it this way. Gamergate, everybody at the time knew about it who was involved in gaming. Mm-hmm. With this Frosky incident, with the history of Gamergate, now it wasn't fresh on everybody's mind, but you set up two sides in a fashion that creates acceptable conflict, meaning you can go back and forth in the debate versus streaming. Could you imagine the views to that? Everybody, because that is dear to the heart. So move, and you're, and I agree with you. Right now, we're building out, and we just started an NFL podcast. We have a basketball podcast, and next week we launch our baseball podcast. It's all pure sports. The only time we talk politics and sports now is my podcast called Points on the Board. And again, I'm the angry Latino at everyone in America who's progressive, because I'm like, you're just shortchanging all our American kids. And I get angry. And here's my take. My friend said, William, why are you defending us blacks? I moved to the South. My dad was in the military. And my whole tribe, it was like eight of us growing up, two Lumbee Indians, two Asians, myself, one to two black guys, and a white guy. So that's why it's like, because we never looked at race. So y'all separating us by color, you know, and my friends who were black and Asian were smarter than me or the white guy, you know, it's like, but y'all are sitting here changing this whole world. So that's why I got into this. And I think the gaming industry is one influence that can not only help bring people of color, because it's an, you don't have to go to college for that. You can go to a 2-year school, and then you can get out. And what greater gift is that to somebody's parents to see their child rising above the ashes? That's how my parents looked at it. I've never seen my dad and I were never close. He was married to the job, but I've never seen a man more proud than when people were telling him, "Yeah, your boy's actually starting something here," because he had no clue. He didn't care, you know. So, and not to mention the hope. I mean, look, I'm sorry. I don't want my friends or family to live in the barrio, and they do. You know, it's nothing against the barrio, except for the fact it's more prevalent to drugs and crime, and that's just a statistical fact. I want their asses in the suburbs with me. You know, so then I get angry that they want to bring the projects to the suburbs just to screw with things. You know, it's people just don't look at life. And on your talk, on your point, It's you know what's more important to me? Hey man, I got a hold of somebody who's younger to come on and talk about this, because there is differences in how we look at the world from our age groups and our demographics. Right. And older people, 100%. Oh, the world's going to hell. I'm like, yeah, it is, but there's reasons why. Do you know why? It's because you and I failed to do certain things, and now they're screwed, and they have to react around that. So I just view it like, look, man, I want the world to become kumbaya. I know it's not, so let's battle in our field. And this gaming one is great. But I'm babbling again. So added the whole frosting, I just found it fascinating. I thought it was a great cultural point with the equivalence of Gamergate in the history of gaming. But let's move on to, these were two big important issues. Let's move on to what they're calling Gamergate 2, or as I call it, Death to Grums. Because the guy has seen death threats. Now, to set the audience up, Sweet Baby Inc. is a narrative design company that supposedly aims to enhance storytelling in video games by promoting diversity and inclusion. I don't view it that way. I view it as they're a company that wants to push and promote DEI. There may be no issue with the character in the game, but if that character doesn't conform to them, it becomes an issue. So they look to pick fights that nobody cares about to promote their ideology. And here's what I tell America. all of these nonprofits on the progressive side are funded by deep-pocketed people. So it's not just about promoting their ideology, is they are also enriching themselves. As far as Grums, as I said earlier, Grums is an important individual in the lore of gaming because of War of Warcraft. So with that, tell me a little bit of how this began, how it got started. As I understand, it was through the Steam community forums that I'm vaguely aware of because I have purchased many games from them.
Well, I mean, it started a little bit before that, because here's the thing. We've been hearing grumblings of things like sensitivity readers for some while. I would say, I mean, this probably started back with, well, it started well before that. But like, there's been several games that have come out over the last few years where shit just didn't make sense. I mean, like, it did not make sense at all. Like, take for instance, Square Enix is a Japanese company.
Right.
And you know, listen, I'm black. We got to be rare. The Japanese ain't too fond of blacks. Like Asians in general. It's not like they hate, but it's like, okay, you know.
I will back you up. I served with thousands of men, and I'm gonna catch heat for this, but I found Asians were the tightest culturally, and I'd say politically correct. They didn't like outsiders coming in. And it's easy to point out the blacks, that is very true. But what I discovered, Japan, they let no outsiders come in with their ideological beliefs. That's bad and good. It's good because they keep their culture, their heritage, but it's bad because they look at us all as I don't want to say vile or evil, but as disruptors wanting to come in and take over or whatever reason. So we get the short end.
I think that if I was to move to Japan, I should prove why I deserve to be there. I think, you know, anytime you're in somebody else's country, you're in their culture, I think that you should have to prove that you're worth there. I mean, I'm just going to say it.
I agree. I just don't like the fact that their door is just shut and locked tightly, you know, at least loosen it up. But you're right. That's what I think about the United States of America. I'm like, you know, my dad, he came from Puerto Rico. I love telling this story. He was fired from his first factory job because he didn't know English. His cousin or uncle, I can't remember which one, would stand near the supervisors, listen, then go tell my dad. But, I mean, the supervisor wasn't stupid. After a couple of days, he's like, this fool don't know English. And they fired his ass. My dad speaks flawless English because he knew this is America. This is what's needed to survive. Now they're telling immigrants, you don't have to learn the English language. You don't have to give up your culture. And I'm like, well, that's why we have a lot of chaos. When there's no loyalty to the country, as you were talking about being destroyed from within, that's what's happening. You know, so I agree with you in that sense. I apologize for interrupting. My brother's actually half Japanese. My dad's first wife was Japanese. And my brother, he completely lost his family except for one to two relatives in Nagasaki, you know, and the reason I bring that up is you can also look at a person and have no clue who or what is within that person's psyche, but yet that's why I think stereotyping is absolutely wrong in and of itself. Okay, so so you said it started a little bit early. How did it start specifically then with Sweet Baby Inc. on Steam? And for the audience out there, Steam is arguably or is the number one portal now for transactions of game sales, or at least that's a perception I get out of it.
Yeah, so, I mean, basically where I was going back and I was saying is like Forspoken was that first game made by Square Enix where it was like a black girl. It's like the lead, and it's like, it's kind of weird, but the game looks good, so we'll play it. But then it comes out, and it's not good. The lead is terrible. She's obnoxious, you know, bitch. It is what it is. You also got other things that didn't really make sense, like God of War Ragnarok came out, I want to say last year or the year before, one of those years, and we're talking about a game about, you know, Norse mythology.
Right.
But we randomly tossed in a black girl with dreads in there. I mean, but the game is good. The game is good, but make that make sense to me. But whatever, we'll ignore it. And then Spider-Man 2 comes out, and, you know, we got Miles Morales, which is the black Spider-Man. And, you know, we're all excited about that. But we're starting to notice, is it me or is Peter Parker getting sunned in his own game? Like, it's like at every turn, it's like Peter Parker is here and Miles Morales is up here. And it's like, it's kind of weird. Then there was the whole Mary Jane situation. So then you get this Suicide Squad game that comes out. Now, Suicide Squad was already going to be bad. Like, we already knew it. When we saw it last year, when they released the gameplay for it, we're talking about a game about superheroes / supervillains. So the fantasy is to play as these villains with their powers. So why are we getting a video game with supervillains all shooting guns? There's a literal character called King Shark, where you're a literal shark that can talk. So I'm thinking maybe I get to swim around and eat people, kill people, rip people apart. I'm shooting a grenade launcher. That doesn't really make sense. So people were already skeptical about the game. Well, the game comes out, and then there's all of this feminist propaganda in it. There's each Justice League member is getting disrespected badly, which would be fine because we get the Justice League is supposed to be the villains this time. Right. Except for some odd reason, Wonder Woman gets a lot of respect, but all the other male characters is like, fuck them. Harley Quinn is talking about how she doesn't like a comic book outfit. Yeah, because it's like it's not like feminist approved. So, and then, you know, the way that they disrespected Batman. So ultimately what happened was gamers started thinking, what is going on? Like, what is all this weird stuff? Well, a line started to be drawn, right? We started connecting dots. And there's one company at the center of all this bullshit. It's these consulting companies, and one in particular called Sweet Baby Inc. And they were involved with Suicide Squad. Now, it's not that big, right? Like, people talking about it, but it's not that big. Then you get this guy named Cabrutus who gets on Steam and he creates a curator list where it's basically he's creating a list of games that may have been involved with Sweet Baby Inc. Here's the thing.
I remember that.
Games are listed on their website. So it's not like he unearthed this from, you know, the secret base under the gaming industry. No, this was on their website. So he just created a list so people didn't have to go to their website to see it. So it's pretty much saying, hey, listen, guys, if you care about this and you don't want to support this company, don't play these games. Well, you get this trans woman who comes on Twitter who points this out and demands that Steam take down that curator list and bans Cabrutus for making the list, which he didn't break terms of service. He didn't do anything illegal. And that went viral, and it caused more and more people to support this list. And that's how Gamergate 2 kicked off.
Well, hold on. When you say support this list, meaning not purchase or buy those games.
When he first started, before this trans woman said anything, this list only had a few thousand. So it's a group, right? It's like you can join the group. And it had a few thousand people in the group. Once Chris Kendrick came and said what he or she or however you identify, once you said what you said, people caught wind of it. It blew up because you were trying to get them removed from Steam. It's not, and I want to make sure people understand that it's not just that Chris Kendrick wanted the list removed. It's also that Chris Kendrick wanted Cabrutus and his entire Steam library banned, meaning all the money that he spent on every game he spent gone. And so that's what, like, people reacted to that. And so now I think they're at over 500,000 members in that group.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's incredible. So, you know, that forum creator there is like living in La La Land with that many. Because at the end of the day, technically, well, you shouldn't care how many followers you have there. About the content that. Yeah, that's true. Boy, you get 500,000 followers, you're a happy guy. And I agree. So in essence, what happened was, they were using their power and relationships to try to threaten, get this guy taken out, and it blew up on them. Mm-hmm. Did Steam ever come out with their a comment, like an official comment on where they stood on it?
Nope, because I want to give kudos. Nobody, I don't think anybody's ever did this. I think Steam is really smart. Like, they're one of the companies that are like, nope, not getting involved. Figure it out yourself. Unless you break their terms of service, they're not getting involved. They didn't say anything. And that's what I advocate for people to do. I don't advocate for anybody to pick side. Well, creators anyway. I don't advocate for anyone to pick a side. My side, their side, his side, her side, any of that. I think you should just, I'm not going to speak on this. And that's what Steam did.
You know, you're absolutely correct. You know, I tell my friend, he's libertarian, my partner, and we go back and forth on the do's and don'ts. And I'm like, look, there's sometimes you do have to be PC just for business reasons, meaning there's no reason to say it like that. It's going to cost the sales. Why do you have to say it? Just stay out of it. You know, sure, I think of this, think of that. And there's sometimes where you got to put your foot down. And, you know, and that has ramifications, good and bad. Okay, so I do remember Grums tweeting about the whole Steam thing, but because, and I just now the last 2 years, 3 years discovered the forums and things like that, because I'd go to Steam whenever I see a sale, go buy it at Steam, and that was it. But when I started playing the games, you know, like most people, I need a guides list, a cheat sheet or whatever. Like, that's when I discovered the communities. They targeted, first of all, they played the victim after that, did they not? After the backlash, they were playing the victim. And that's what got him in hot water with Grums. And then they started harassing Grums himself. Grums's take is they're pushing a woke ideology. They're pushing DEI, which is more about equity, meaning you have to have this many of this color, this many of that color, this many of this religion, this many of that culture. I'm simplifying it, but in essence, it has nothing to do with qualified people being hired as much as how your room looks or your office.
Well, yeah, I mean, just on my show, I literally just did the math for a lot of people. And what I did a math problem. There's 45 million black. Let's say when we're talking to just people of color, black Americans, right? We need more black people in here. Sure, fine. Let's be generous and assume 5% of black people are actually not only interested, but talented enough to actually create video games. 5% of 45 million is 2,225,000 people. Now you take that same 5%, which I would argue is probably a little bit more than 5% of the, you know, white population. 240 white Americans in this country. That number wound up being 12 million. So you got 12 million, you know, interested and talented enough to work in the industry, assuming that. And right. two, not even 2.5 million black Americans. There's not enough diversity, equity, and inclusion to go around. You're exactly. forcing people to hire people it's just not enough. And my thing is, what they did was they tried to get, hey, we need more black people in the industry. And then they heard crickets. Oh, shit. Yep. We're trying to force them. This is a cultural thing. I'm sorry, being a black person, it's different in the North.
Supply and demand. There's just not enough.
It's not enough. Yes, you can't force every company to hire. Right. Like you mentioned equity. Oh, we need, you know, if we got 100 creators, we need 50 of them to be black. Okay, well, right. That's just not enough. So I'm from the South. I'm in Atlanta. Maybe it's different in the North or in the West. I don't know too many black people grew up saying, I want to be a video game designer. I'm sorry. You can say whatever you want.
I'm from North Carolina too, and the South is the heart of Black America in terms of numbers outside of the urban centers around the country. So with you making that statement, it should speak volumes. But somebody who represents DEI is going to look at you like, "Oh, shut up! I don't want to hear what you're hearing because it goes against what I'm trying to do here." And that's what
they don't even take the time to say that. They don't even take the time to say that. Because I mean, a lot of my fellow content creators they get into debates with other people, and I try to. Like insert myself in that because I feel like my voice would carry. They literally avoid me. Like it's like, oh, that black guy again. Let's go ahead.
Do they avoid
because they can't.
They don't want to argue with somebody who is black who can actually push back without being called a racist.
They can't call me racist. That's what it is.
Yeah.
They can't call me racist. Yeah. So
yeah, that's why I came out because I'm Latino a bit. I'm like, I told my partner, no, you can't say it, but I can. But they're gonna look at you as white. Mm-hmm. True. But here's the problem with that. My grandmother was black. Everybody else is bronze. Me and a couple of others, we're the ones who got the gene where he came out light.
Right.
And but it's sad. It's sad that we're at that point. And I put the blame not on bad parenting, but on the fact parents have to work a job, each one of them. They don't have a lot of time for their children, so they trust
I put the blame on the college campuses.
Yeah. Well, that's where it ends, but it actually starts in public schools. They don't teach. My issue in public schools is young kids. Used to say blacks, then people of color. Now it's every kid. They're coming out indoctrinated, and college is like it's like the wedding happens in high school, and the reception happens in college to finalize the indoctrination. So Grums is claiming DEI. That has caused the harassment and the backlash. How do you view the situation between Grums fighting him? Do you think Grums is getting enough support? Do you think Grums is a warrior? Do you think Grums needs to stop for his own safety with the death threats? I guess my question is, what is your take on the Grums versus that side? Are you jumping in there? Do you think it's good? How do you view this portion of it?
I'm in support of him. We're never going to be a monolith. We're never going to be an echo chamber. There are certain things that he believes that I may not believe. And, you know, as far as his safety, I do have concerns for his safety. Yeah, I think sure. people severely, I think people, I'm sorry. I think people severely underestimate, you know, there's a great line in season one of Daredevil where he says, never underestimate how far those in power will go to stay where they, that's not the quote, but it's something close. So like, as far as him, like you literally got people who are publicly saying things like, you know, what was it? 20,000 to whoever yes. can, you know, make yeah, this dipshit disappear.
Some individuals put a bounty on Kern's head, one offering 20,000 to anybody who could make him disappear. Kern called for an FBI mm-hmm. investigation into Twitch streamer Denims for allegedly making a $30,000 bounty joke on his life. Are you familiar with this Twitch streamer, Denims?
No, I wasn't familiar until she made that comment.
Gotcha. So yes, he has. And that's what I fear for him is that anybody. It's like, because there's going to come a time when the progressive side is going to mess with the wrong side, and it's going to be like the shots heard round, and it's going to be a massacre. And what will happen is the mainstream media, the progressive side, they're all going to play the victim. But Thomas Sowell, I don't know if you ever heard about from Thomas Sowell. Mm-hmm. Thomas Sowell is a libertarian economics, and he said it best. And he's my favorite intellectual. To me, he's this generation's or his generation's greatest, and he grew up a black Marxist, you know, and eventually became a libertarian. Mm-hmm. So that's why I began following him. The reason I followed him is I'd love to hear different cultures from their sides, their growth, their success, and he says, look. For black Americans, they were push. You can only do Jim Crow. You can only do segregation for so long before they fight back. He goes, it's no different mm-hmm. with the other side. He goes, and that is what will happen if the progressive side takes control and begins going over the top. Death rates, incarcerating people. Mm-hmm. The hate that formulates is a human nature. And he's saying that's not good for society. And that's what I try to tell people. It has nothing to do with color or culture. Hate is something that formulates over time when you are, excuse my friend, shitting on people over and over. Mm-hmm. They will only take it for so long, you know? And we saw that with Black America in the 60s. How long is it going to take before Anglos or whatever other culture says enough? And honestly, Atreus, that's my fear. My fear is... And then I look at Planned Parenthood. They've wiped out over 30 million black Americans since the inception of Roe versus Wade. And I'm like, do y'all realize that's, that? I'm not you.
That's number. That is a conversation. I thought it was more than that because I thought it was either the CDC or someone else who said the black population would be close to 90 million. If not for plan, and I always paint it like this because, you know, people love to tell me about how pro-black they are and, you know, we're for black people. You call me an Uncle Tom, right? Okay. Do you realize your biggest op, you know, with the kids, we say op, like the opposition, your biggest enemy of all time, she sent 30 plus million of you to the grave without ever having to shoot an arrow, to launch a missile, to shoot a gun. And she did it because she knew you would be stupid enough to go and sign up for it. But you sitting here telling me I'm the coon and you're deleting 300,000 black children a year. It's blown. That's a whole nother conversation.
Yeah, it is. And one reason I got into this, my mom's Panamanian. She looks like a short little Asian woman. When we line up, nobody knows she's my mother. No one. Hell, and when it was my grandmother, my mother and me, they all thought we were three separate individuals. Mm-hmm. But I saw how Americans talked down to her. you know, hey, Mrs. Clements, and really slow. And I'm a child, 6 or 7. And I just saw, I'm like, as an adult, I realize that's human nature, but that's what I call the savior complex. They viewed themselves as more educated, living a better lifestyle, even though we were in the same neighborhood and my dad, Puerto Rican, outranked her husband, you know? So I would see all these things and it affected me. And then I saw it in terms of how people who want to help others, especially in social service, I'm like, I get you want to help it and I applaud you, but you're looking down on them. And I will end this part because it's a completely different topic, but indirectly or directly related with Governor Hochul and what she said the other day about young black kids.
About the computers. You know what I'm talking about. We just talked about that on the show.
And to make it worse, what's even funnier is all these black Americans doing their skits on it. You know, hilarious. But I'm like, I am so glad she said that because I've been trying to tell anybody who listen. That's how, and it's not just because she's white. It's any elitist. That's how they look down on us. You know, it's harder for black Americans because that you guys have been taking the beating. You know, for since you came here, but it's happening across the board. So we'll move on. I'm belaboring that point, and I don't want to keep you much longer. So there have been death threats. Kern has not played the victim. He's standing strong. So before we close this out, who is Alyssa Mercante? I just noticed her in the social media a couple of days ago in terms of how she was just 2 days ago, I think. Oh, woe is me. They're doxing me. They're doing this. And I'm always rolling my eyes. And I'm like, well, your side kind of started at first. And you had a final take that you put a video on there. Relay that to the audience on who she is or whatever you know about that situation and why you came to your conclusion.
So Alyssa Mercante is the senior editor at Kotaku, and she's also a former sex worker. She's worked in various positions of the media, but she is a hardcore feminist that works in an industry where she hates the audience that she's been tasked with serving. That's just the brunt of who she is. She's made a name for herself writing a lot of hit pieces on different gamers and content creators and things like that. But she threw her hat in the ring throughout this Sweet Baby Inc. situation. And she kind of championed herself to be like the last defender because, you know, black girl gamers have been silent. Sweet Baby Inc. has been silent.
Yeah.
I've become a fan of Gothix. Shouts out to Gothix. A lot of the people who came out to challenge gamers on this Sweet Baby Inc. stuff, they're silent. They're gone, and I mean, they blocked most of us, and they're just doing their thing on Twitter. You know, they're saying their little things, you know, behind everyone's back. But you know how it is. So Alyssa Mercante, basically, she threw her hat in the ring to be like the last standing person to stand up against the toxic, racist, misogynistic gamers and things like that. But like all the others, she has been soundly defeated because what she did was she did a little hit pieces, but. Smash JT, shout out to Smash JT. He wanted to start a movement to end Kotaku, which I agree with. And so she got mad because he retweeted a guy that, and I will defend her on this. The guy that he retweeted was a guy who made a thumbnail with a picture of her and a gun up to her head. That is, and here's the thing. He didn't smash JT. He retweeted a tweet from the guy putting in Kotaku in it. It did not have that thumbnail in it. She saw that and said, why would you platform a guy who made this thumbnail of me? And Smash JT had no idea. You know, he took down the post. But yeah, I have to defend her on that. If you make a thumbnail of me with a gun up to my head, if I ever catch you in person, I'm assuming my life is in danger. I have to end you before you end me.
Yeah. So, and that's what people don't understand.
Yeah, and so I would defend her on that. But Smash JT, he took down the retweet, and he apologized for it, and she still went after him. And so what she ultimately did was she went after his wife. She found his wife on Facebook, DM'd her, you know, trying to, I guess, alert his wife of, I guess, his behavior on Twitter. And I guess she got upset because neither one of them responded to her. And ultimately, she went low, and somebody, because her information is actually on Facebook, by the way, nobody knew she had a Facebook. Nobody looked her up on Facebook. And so because she reached out to Smash JT's wife, now her Facebook is exposed. Now her information is public, and somebody went and got all that information, put it in a tweet, and put it online. And that's ultimately how she got doxxed. She got doxxed because of her own reasons, and ultimately that's what it is.
And for the audience out there, I'm sure most of you are aware what doxing means. Doxing is when somebody calls the police as a threat. They give him the address, and the police will go, SWAT will go there a lot of times because the threat.
It doesn't necessarily always involve the police. SWATting is when it's always involving the police. This was just a situation where somebody posts all her personal information.
Okay, so doxing is anybody can go there and do that. The difference.
Yeah.
Gotcha, mm-hmm. gotcha. And somebody died that we talked about before that I know of from doxing. I don't know the story behind it, but doxing is serious. And at this point, I kind of now blame the police. They've seen enough doxes. They need to have some guidelines to start avoiding this. It's not their fault. Mm-hmm. What I'm saying is they are being used as weapons of destruction, weapons of mass destruction, for lack of a better word. So they need to realize what's happening too. And I'm sure they have procedures, but that's something that's scary. Because anybody can be doxxed, you know, and Kotaku is for the audience, is a very DEI supporting type publication. It's a magazine. Is it just an online magazine or did they have an actual print version? Do you know?
Kotaku?
Yeah.
I think it's just online.
Gotcha.
I think it's just online. Yeah. I could be wrong, but I think so.
I came to recognize that name because every time there were the two sides, it was Kotaku was always referenced. The only time I smiled, and I know this is terrible because you don't wish this on anybody, but I couldn't help it was when I saw other layoffs start, you know, maybe a few months back.
Well, I mean, Kotaku has a reputation, not just amongst gamers, but amongst developers too. I mean, there was this situation, there was a gaming convention. I can't think of the name of it right now, but they had a sign. It was hilarious. It was directions trying to send the people who attended directions, and arrow going this way, and then at the bottom it said Kotaku's journalistic integrity, and it had, you know what, you ever went to a website and you get that error message with the X with the circle around it and it says 404
found? Yeah,
they had that there. And everyone laughed at it because everybody believes that about Kotaku. And also, Nintendo have them blacklisted to where they won't send them review copies of their games anymore.
Oh, wow.
So that tells you what the industry thinks about Kotaku. And so Alyssa, right now, she's on the internet trying to figure out why aren't there more bigwigs throughout the gaming industry coming to her defense or Kotaku's defense. It's because nobody fucking likes you guys. Like, nobody likes you guys.
You know, when you alienate your core, I always akin it to in the movie the dumbass who helps the bad guy, and at the end of the movie, as the bad guy stabs him or kills him, they got this "Why me?" That's Kotaku right now.
Yeah.
And I always tell people it's the fable. I don't know if it's Grimm or Aesop's fable. You know, the scorpion on the back of the frog's taking him over the river, and promising the frog he won't sting him, stings the frog halfway, and the frog's "Why?" And the scorpion answers, "It's my nature." And people, we ignore human nature too much in politics, these ideological fights, because we want to take sides and we want to make it black and white. But human nature is what truly, truly dictates us, or dictates who we are. Atreus, tell the audience once again where they can find you, specifically your YouTube or whatever you want, but your YouTube and at least your X profile, because I know you're active on there. And I enjoy his videos. That's how I discovered him. And I reached out and he was gracious enough to come speak to us. But I have to ask you one question before you do that, since you're a gamer, obviously. I found it. This is a generational difference. You said something about, I can't even remember the topic, but you mentioned Steve Marvel. You mentioned the movie. I mentioned the comics. You know, the difference in generation, where your generation tended to grow up with a big emphasis on the movies as much as the comics, where there were no
movies just me.
In my era.
That's just me. A lot of guys my age, they actually read comics. I was never a comics guy. Like, I never, like, growing up, comics wasn't even, like, it was an afterthought. Like, And that was just me. It might have been other kids with comics. I didn't know too many kids that had comics. I was really into Dragon Ball, anime type stuff.
Anime.
And then it was video games and books. I read Harry Potter books and Lord of the Ring books. But comic books. And then like later on in life, I tried to get into comic books. I just can't do it, man. Like, I don't get it. I tried, the first comic book I ever bought was the Dark Knight. And then I bought Age of Ultron. And I just like it. What blew my mind was like, it was one page right here. They were having a conversation in the kitchen. I flipped the page and then it was like, boom, we're in the middle of a war. And I was like, wait, what just happened? And I was flipping back pages. I was like, did I miss something? So yeah, like, I don't know that. I just can't get into comics. I'm sorry.
For me, I saw generation.
So I'm a Marvel normie.
Okay, gotcha, gotcha. For me, it was just generational. I grew up with comics. It was my escape. But as I kept reading comics as a young adult, it was still my escape in the military. You know, you're holed up somewhere. Mm-hmm. You read them. But I started to see a simplification of the stories. The artwork was more cartoony. I grew up with the Neil Adams, the George Perez, the John Buscemi's who did the Conans. You know, so it was a different era. And now, I'll be frank, they're just, to me, unaffordable. I'm like, you got to pay $3 to be entertained for 10 minutes here? I'm done with the comic. That's how I kind of looked at it, you know? So, I wanted to get your take before you give us your information. And once again, I digress, so I apologize. But you mentioned movies and games. Had you seen the new Fallout, the series on Amazon yet? And if you have, what are your thoughts real quick?
We're actually in the middle of – so what I do is for me and my channel members – we go into the Discord and we react to the latest movies and TV shows.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
And so tonight we're doing episode 2 of Fallout. I got to say that I've never got into the Fallout games. I'm trying to now. I got to be honest, I'm playing Fallout 4. I am getting absolutely destroyed in that game, but we'll make it through. But as far as the show, episode 1 was really good. So I look forward to episode 2 tonight. As a matter of fact,
I'll give you my take as somebody who played. I'll give you my take as somebody who played Fallout 3 and Fallout New Vegas. The show captures everything in terms of the feeling, the sets, the energy, all that. And I played those two games, but I'm not a hardcore. I have Fallout 1, 2, 3. I just haven't figured out or found the time to play them. And I have Fallout 7. I have them all. But I've only played those two in its entirety, and they are immensely enjoyable. My first experience with a vast wasteland, you know, you can go literally anywhere, but they hit it spiritually. Now, I haven't read or I just started replaying Fallout 3 because I want to see, okay, what are these differences everybody's complaining about? But my issue with those differences is it's still a hell of a show. You know, yeah. I binge watched it in 2 days, 8 episodes, boom, 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 boom. So I was up to 2 or 3. But anyway, I may hit you up. I'm trying to find a Fallout guru who's played all the games who has issues to talk about that, you know. But that said, Atreus, please tell the audience where they can find you again. And thank you so much for coming on. So let us know how we can find out more about you.
Yeah, so you can subscribe to my channel on Atreus. It's Atreus. It's literally that simple. And then on Twitter, it's Official Atreus. And that's pretty much it.
And we'll make sure we have those links and those profile signs. And to the rest of the audience, once again, thank you for Atreus and where you can find him. But do not forget, you can find this podcast and others at grumblingsmedia.com, as well as YouTube, Rumble, Apple, Spotify, Pandora, and Google at the Grumblings Media profile. So thank you for listening. Please do not forget to share. And until next time, I bid you adieu.